Hello, Jeff. Welcome, everybody, to the Jeff and Jamie feed. We are so glad you're with us today. We have a great topic we're talking about. We often talk about farms on here because we are heavily threaded in the produce.
Is that
farms.
Where all the food comes from?
That's where the food comes from. It doesn't just appear out of a truck, Jeff. It actually comes from farms. And I mean, we're always looking for ways to work better with our partners. I mean, right now we're in the midst of hopefully setting up ongoing calls with the Freshless team and our chefs to try to coordinate and communicate.
I am so looking forward to that because we'll go into this. But when we first met with our guest today, Tim Belk, he blew my mind with how far away we get our food from.
Right.
It is astounding. So I think whatever initiatives we can do, starting that communication with our local farmers and our chefs, and not just for us, but for the whole chef community in Charlotte, I think is a wonderful direction.
Absolutely. And I know right now you're going through each one of our menus with our team to kind of find spots where we can really focus on that seasonality.
Yeah. When you say you're going through, you mean I'm making Steve do that for me.
Well, but I know Mariah's helping you, Steve. It's a team effort.
It's a team effort. But yeah, I think us going through each menu and seeing where we can add touches of seasonality, even if it's just a sauce or a topping or, you know, whatever. But all these little touches as you go through our menu, there's some items that are never going to change the base of them. But I think we can, you know, really highlight on some sauces or some garnishes and really add some really cool touches.
Yes. And that allows us to be more seasonal. That's fun for the chefs. It supports local farms. It also allows us to have fresher, more nutritive local ingredients that we can work with as a team, which is awesome.
And I think for us, I think people don't realize how many people that we feed. We feed over 1,000 people every single day. And so for us, it takes so much planning and getting ahead of the curve and being thoughtful seasonality wise. And this is why we have to talk to the farmers, because we can't just wait for them to say, hey, we have a case of this, because that's going to last us about 5 minutes. And now that we have, you know, 6 places, we're working on a 7th, like we really need to have a nice supply and timely and thoughtfully sourced.
Yes, because by the time we need it, like they need to plan months in advance to put that seed in the ground.
Yes, we can't just go and forage for a few things in the woods because 1,000 people eat more than that every day.
Yes. Well, farms are clearly a big part of what we do. And today we're looking at farming from a totally different angle. We are bringing on our friend Tim Belk, who you guys know that name. You know that family name. We're going to dive into a little bit of his family history, their legacy, and the difference that he and his team at the Carolina Farms Fund are making in this area around local farming practices. So why don't we bring Tim on now?
This is going to be great.
Well, welcome on, Mr. Belk. We're so glad to have you here. And you don't want me to call you Mr., do you?
Not yet.
We're so glad to have you on here. We're so glad to have you on. And really, I think just so that people here who are listening know about you, Tim Belk is part of the Belk family. They are well known for their department stores. I would love to hear your history. I know you've been CEO for a decade or so there and now have retired from that, and you're working on the Carolina Farms Fund along with a number of other things, but would love to just hear a little bit about your family history here in Charlotte with the Belk Corporation.
Well, that's now 10 years ago that we were running a retail department store, and I had 2 brothers in the business. And we had a great run. Love being a part of that. The people I really miss. But it's now sort of fading into the past. Mm-hmm. And several other chapters are opening up.
I love that. Well, you guys are known throughout this area for the difference that you've made, like philanthropically. And, I mean, you see your name. We went to Davidson College. So yes. We've been very familiar. And I played basketball. He played tennis. We've been very familiar with that.
Steph Curry and I wouldn't be where we are today without Belk Dorm and Belk Arena.
That's right.
So we both say thank you to you.
We love that college. What a great place. And I just think of the talent it's brought to Charlotte. We've all been the beneficiaries of such a great institution. Mm-hmm.
Well, we've all been beneficiaries of your ancestors really creating opportunities for people and better facilities for people and just really building up the city and the Carolinas in general. So thank you to
your family. But now you're on to your own philanthropic things.
And, that's right. We're here to talk about farms, not clothing and department stores, but farms. So that's pretty crazy.
How unlikely.
So tell us about the Carolina Farms Fund, what it does, the purpose.
Well, the Carolina Farms Fund has this mission of conserving farmland within maybe 75 to 100 miles of Charlotte. That farmland is quickly disappearing as Charlotte grows and develops. And we think that it has an important role in the sort of slice of land conservation, and that farmland can be turned into working farms that feed a growing population. And I know how much y'all appreciate local fresh, the nutrition around local fresh. And we are working hard to help support farmers become owners and invest and scale up and supply this growing population. So that's kind of in a nutshell what it's all about. And we're part of an initiative supported by a larger organization called the Conservation Fund. We look at it as the third engine under the hood of the Conservation Fund. It's still in its sort of early stages, and we're the third site.
Okay, so how in the world did you go from where you were, you know, working in department stores to now being over some farm initiatives here in town? How does that work?
Well, when you retire from something, you know, you don't really know exactly what you think you know, but you don't. Let me just say that. So I don't know exactly how I got to where I am right now. I knew that I wanted to do something that involved my wife. And at Belk, we were more disconnected than connected. And my kids also not as connected. So I wanted to do something that she wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I always thought she wanted to be an organic farmer. And and so I said, well, hey, you want to do that? And she said, I'm too old to be a farmer, an organic farmer. And I said, well, how about if I'll volunteer to be your project manager on this venture? And she was the vision. I was sort of the doer. And we went and looked at farms. We had this property in Chester, and we ended up hiring a farm manager, a person who ran the Clemson Organic Farm. Mm-hmm. And we were off and running. And on this venture, we didn't really know exactly what we were getting into. And then my daughter, who was in Boston, said she wanted to be considered for this venture. And she moved to Charlotte. And we went, really? Did we send you off to college to come back and work on the family farm? And so we had to think about that. Did she really know what she was doing, want to get into it? And she did. And so there were three of us initially.
Oh, my.
And so that was back in 2017 when we started to open up our first field and put infrastructure in place. And so that's how it started.
Okay. And for those of you who don't know, that's Wild Hope Farm. And it's in Chester, South Carolina, right?
Right.
Okay. So how many acres did you say it is? And what do you primarily grow?
So we have 12 and a half acres under production.
Okay.
And the first year we had 3 acres. A year later, we added another 2.5 going to 6. And then in the third year, we opened up another 6 going to 12 and a half. So we have, you know, for a vegetable farm, that's a lot of acreage. And yeah, it's hard to explain how many vegetables can come off of 12 and a half acres. But
I think that's one of the things that blows my mind every time, especially when I visit your farms, where I think you guys being close to the city are much more conscious of like consolidating and using smaller parcels of land extremely well.
Because you can get a lot out of land if you take care of it.
incredible amounts that you guys produce out of a few acres.
Yeah, we our half of our distribution goes to a farm share, to a CSA farm share, and we have about 450 members who buy a box of vegetables weekly from us. And so variety is important if you're a farm share farm.
Yeah, you don't want to get the same thing every
yeah,
week.
People want the staples. They want the lettuce, but they also want the variety. So we have 50 different types of vegetables that we grow.
People want lettuce?
So we have a joke. He always wants a salad. We always say he's craving a salad, but yeah, we know that's
you know
not
about
really
that.
The case.
Yeah. You know about that.
Yeah, Jeff and salads. But so organic is a whole other ballgame. Like, how are you actually... How different is it from doing just a farm? You know, does that create a whole bunch more challenges?
Well, that's a big open question. And it's, you know, it's one of the questions we faced early on is, what does certified organic mean? Mm-hmm. What does permaculture mean? What does biodynamic mean? And I'd say the simple way of thinking about it is, you know, if you get to know your farmer, you get to know how they treat the soil and how they treat the vegetables on the soil and what are their practices, what chemicals do they use, you know, are they healthy, that type of thing. And so certified organic tries to put a little bit of a standard into that, and certified organic is more about what you don't do, mm-hmm. what you don't use, the bad things.
Okay.
But that's the simple explanation.
But there aren't very many local organic farms, from what I can tell. Is that right?
I'd agree with you. It's surprising how few certified organic there are. And some people don't want to go through the hassle of certifying themselves. They're doing the practices. And there are a number of farms around here. And as you get to know the farmers at the farmers markets or other places, you know, I like the way they farm. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really that necessary to have this certified organic label attached to it.
If you know your farmer.
If you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the educated consumers.
But you guys also do at Wild Hope, like, a lot of regenerative practices. Like, and I remember, so Jeff and I had the chance to go to the first induction of a new farm for the Carolina Farm Fund. Deep Roots Farm received a certain number of acres. We went to that dinner in celebration of this farm now having, how many acres do they have? Does Deep Roots have?
They have an additional 44, and they had 7
okay.
beforehand that they owned.
What a huge difference. So 44 acres now that Deep Roots has. And it's amazing to go out to those places and see those places work and learn about the regenerative practices that they use to make sure that the soil is gaining in nutrients even when crops are not being grown that you might typically sell. So we learned a little bit about, like, the cover crops that they were growing at that time. And I don't know if you can talk a little bit about that. I certainly don't know very much about it, but I find it fascinating.
Yeah, that's a great topic. So cover crops are used to help make sure that the soil doesn't get washed away during rainstorms. And a second reason for cover crops is that they put nutrients back into the soil. So you think of nitrogen fixers. You've probably heard that term and not known what it exactly is, but it pushes nitrogen back into the soil and replenishes the nutrient base. That's what cover crops do. And it's, you know, it's like putting fertilizer into the soil. And you've heard the saying probably 1 teaspoon of soil has 1,000 organisms in it.
Oh my gosh.
That's sort of an Elliot Coleman saying. And it's true. So, we need to replenish the nutrients that are taken out when the crops are harvested, and cover crops help do that.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, one of the things, almost like you have your regenerative soil and all that, that I love the most being a MBA and my kind of is the structure of the fund of that your initiative, like, kind of starts and it lets a family grow and build on what they have as farmers and then eventually own the farm. And then you guys are getting money back to put into new farms. So you have, like, you've kind of built like a whole system
yeah.
that, that is like it keeps growing and growing and growing. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? I thought it was so neat.
Well, thanks. You, and you brought up several questions in that what you just said, Jeff. But one of the secret sauces of the Farms Fund is that they take these farmers and they give them a big opportunity. And so in the case of Deep Roots that you mentioned, they're moving from 7 acres to 44 acres. But importantly, they're...
That is just so much fuel, too, because it takes so long, you know, as a farmer to save any money and grow and grow and grow and grow. And you guys are just like rocket fuel right there.
Yep. Give them a big opportunity. But you don't want to swamp the boat at the beginning. You want to give them an opportunity to step up that growth. And it's a scary proposition to sign a mortgage, to commit to that.
I do that all the time. It is very scary.
And so think of that as one thing. A second is you've got to put infrastructure in place. You got to put irrigation. You got to put fencing. You got to do soil prep. You got to get machinery. How do you get all that done? It's scary. It's a lot to think of as you step up. And so that's one of the secret sauces of the Farms Fund. They help the farmer. They provide advice to them. They bring in outside consultants. They help them find funding sources for some of that infrastructure. And they, during this four-year lease period, they're able to kind of step up that growth and begin to scale up in steps and stages, not all at once. So I'd say that's one of the secret sauces to them. They're helping these businesses grow and scale up before they have to sign up for a mortgage. You know, they're at the end of the diving board saying, okay,
we can do this.
We can do this. And you have the support.
You have the support.
Yeah.
That's really important.
So Deep Roots is the first farm that you guys through the Carolina Farm Fund have been able to acquire land and get a farmer on that land. And I know there's a second farm that you guys are working on as well. I believe it's Boy and Girl Farm, and it's about 86 acres. Is that right?
Yep.
That I've heard?
So Boy and Girl Farm is the second transaction that we've done, and they were the farmer match to that. It's really great. The property they are leasing is 96 acres, and it's 10 miles away from their current location. So it allows them to expand over time. And they've got, I'd love for you to see that property at some point. It's beautiful.
Well, we've been seeing their produce for years and years and years.
I have this funny kind of story about them is literally, I remember back when we had Crepe Cellar, it was 2009, and they would walk in, and I have mentioned this story before, they would walk in with baskets, but it was specifically Boy and Girl Farm that I remember them coming in with baskets of food to sell to us. And how, like really? Now we look at it as so archaic, like, how did they, you know, possibly make any money off of that? And then we're just buying what's in the basket. And, you know, there's so many more efficiencies that have begun to happen. But it's so thrilling for us to see them gaining that success and to have the support that you all are providing through the Carolinas Farm Fund to continue to grow, because they do excellent work and they're a great partner.
They do excellent work. And we are so thrilled and feel very lucky that Deep Roots with Wisdom and Cherie are in the program. They're well respected in our region. And now Boy and Girl with Amy and Joe, they're terrific. You know, both of those two could do it on their own. They don't necessarily need the help, but having the help is really an important source. And these two farmers earned enough money to buy their own property. So they're proven. They understand that. Now they'll have the chance to really expand, and there'll be more of the good vegetables that they, you know, that they grow and know how to do and are well known for.
Yeah.
So your program basically takes somebody that has a small farm. You give them the opportunity to grow, which that growth is super scary to me. I mean, going from to 44. I mean, that's six times as big. I mean, that kind of growth, I couldn't imagine going from one restaurant to six, or what we have now, six restaurants to 40. That would be crazy. So you're basically implementing a huge amount of growth and letting and helping them do that. And then that's just basically putting them in a spot where they can go get their own mortgage, their own funding. And then some of that money then comes back to you guys so that you can do another farm.
Yep. So think about it. They pay rent money on the acreage they have for 4 years. They get help during that period if they want it. And then at the end of that period, in year five, they put a mortgage payment down. And when they put that down payment down, they basically they are able to buy the farmland at a discounted price by the value of the easements. When the land is conserved.
Because you're putting it in conservancy. Yeah.
So on average, if it's $1 million piece of property, on average, the easements would be worth half of it. So the public easement money provides half that money. And the farmer repays through the bank loan to the conservation fund the other half. And so that $500,000 would go back into a revolving fund and would be used to go buy another property somewhere and support another farmer getting into business. And so that's how this thing works.
Mm-hmm. So what's the value of having these farms closer to Charlotte, like closer to a metro area? Why not have them like an hour away? Why are you all fighting to have it the food supply closer?
So we're trying to get closer because farmers like to think, how far am I willing to drive my vegetables to market? Mm-hmm. And so that's how we pick 75 to 100 miles from the city. There's no magic number there. It's generally how far is a farmer willing to drive in to this market.
Basically for farmers markets or for a CSA like you guys have.
Yeah. Yep. That's it.
And you guys were talking a little bit before the program about how far food typically travels. What are some of those stats that you share about that? Because I didn't get to be a part of that conversation.
Oh. Well, a lot of our food comes from California. You know, that's the largest producing state. So it's older when it gets here. Mm-hmm. And it's more expensive when it gets here. And so if we can begin to find ways to supply this growing population with food that's grown right nearby, that's mm-hmm. a big win. It's much more nutritious because food begins to degrade right after it's harvested. Mm-hmm. And each day that it's added, some of the nutritional value decreases. So, mm-hmm. you know, in the case of Wild Hope, our food is served up 2 days after it's harvested.
Yeah, Tim, that's great.
You would have loved last night we had dinner, and our 14-year-old has just this small patch of a raised garden outside and a few little planters. And he went and picked his carrots.
He had
four carrots that
I love
he planted
that.
A year ago.
And, not a year ago. And,
well, whatever. In the okay. he planted
five
not,
months ago.
Yeah, many months ago. And he planted these carrots. And he's meticulously, you know, taking the tops off. So he used every piece of the carrot, too. He made pesto.
We've taught him how to make carrot top pesto.
Can we hire that boy?
I think so, because he is just absolutely loves it. And he even will grow plants to the point of being able to pull off the seeds.
One of the neighbors, too, came in when he's doing this. And the carrots, obviously, are full of dirt. And then neighbors like, what's wrong with that carrot?
Because it just came out of the dirt.
It just hasn't been washed off yet. Like, it was like blowing the kid's mind.
Yeah, what's wrong with that carrot? That's what he's.
I love that.
But it was pretty awesome. So nobody got.
How old is he?
He's 14.
So. 14. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
But he's quite the farmer. He's on it. We got him some heirloom seeds for Christmas.
That's right.
And all the stuff that I wanted.
So I love that.
When you were talking before, there was one word that you were talking about, food from California as it comes this way. Of course, it's losing nutritive value, but you also said the price of it. And of course, there's the price monetarily, but there's also just the carbon footprint and all of that. But I thought the one word that was probably a big buzzword for that guy over there was expensive. Because we're always trying to fight to keep our food costs low. And that's something that, is a word that certainly resonates with us in terms of running a more successful, more profitable business, too.
I went to California to see some of the produce that we get We obviously are also trying to feed people, you know, in the wintertime and other times of the year. So we do get a lot of produce from Mexico and California. But I visited some of these farms. I was blown away by the industrial nature and how efficient and, you know, on it they were. But it also, I was blown away on the way home of how far away I was. You know, like you're taking that 5-hour flight back home and you're like, this is not sustainable. We need to get closer.
Yeah. There are a lot of issues wrapped up in that. And we would love to have some local demand that is connected to the farmers in this program where they agree to buy a certain percentage of the produce of the farmers. And eventually we hope to have 70 farmers in this program at the end of 10 years. That's what we hope to do, is to have 70 farmers up and operating. And so think of that as a, you know, a restaurant owner, mm-hmm. that you could have a larger source of local supply of this nutritious food.
So 70 farmers, and how many acres?
We have two now,
that?
So yeah. Our goal is 70.
And within 10 years, how many acres do you think that equates to as
well? So that's roughly 5,000 acres conserved within 75 to 100 miles of Charlotte.
That's a big project to bite off that you're doing. It's you've started.
Yeah. So, you know, we've given ourselves 10 years and yeah. we're now 2 years into it. And we're, you know, it's sort of go slow to go fast.
So yeah. we've started having, as we're having more conversations with farmers and that being an initiative of ours, one of the first things that has like come to our attention is Charlotte is very much like New York City. In the summertime, no one's here. In New York, everybody's in the Hamptons and traveling. And same in Charlotte. You learn pretty quickly who has a mountain house and a beach house because they are not here.
They're gone.
In the summertime. And so it's really, that's our slow period. And it's a little frustrating for the farmers because when they have all this abundance, we don't have guests to feed them this abundance. So we try to do a special dinner at like kind of the peak of the summer called the summer soiree, where we get all of our chefs together and we really try to celebrate the abundance of what the farmers have in the middle of the summer. So that's kind of one initiative that we're doing, but we need to figure out that piece of what do we do with all this, all the produce in the middle of the summer. But then the other piece is we're just trying to do a better job communicating. So we're going through our sales where we know how many carrots we buy each period of the year. We know how many Brussels sprouts we buy. And normally these are purchased in more of a commodity situation. But there's no reason why during certain months of the year when those things are in season that we can't guarantee to buy, you know, 20 cases of carrots, you know, per week and kind of match those things up and really get smarter and plan better with our produce that we can. I don't think we can shift 100% of it, but maybe, you know, we can start by shifting, 20-30% of it local throughout the year and doing a good job and almost guaranteeing, hey, if you have Brussels sprouts in February coming up that we can take all of them. We can take every single Brussels sprout that you can grow, you know, at these two farms, you know, for 2 months.
You know, Jeff, I do think that Charlotte's at the beginning of something really big and growing, and our restaurant life seems to be in a really good place. And I would hope that we could have, you know, our biggest issue is that we don't have the supply we would like here. And even though we're at Wild Hope operating an organic farm, and you could take the point of view, do we need more? Are we going to just bring in more competition of organic farms here? I think that's not the issue. There is a lot of demand out there. And what we need is more farms. And they don't have to be certified organic. They don't have to be GAP certified, but their practices, I think the chefs will want to know what are their practices. Mm-hmm. And your chefs will want to know
well,
that
I think,
as well.
I think that's our job is we should be talking to the farms and know the farmers and have those relationships so our guests can come in and just have a great time. Like, that they know that, you know, the chicken at Haberdish we're getting from Springer Mountain and Joy's Farms.
Exactly.
We're trying to source the best chicken that we can get in the volume that we need. And then you can just come in for dinner and know that we care and we've done our best.
There seems to be a growing appreciation for that. And there seems to be an increased interest in what are the farms that are supplying the chicken, the greens, mm-hmm. you know, and as that trend grows in our sort of metro area, hopefully there'll be more farmers out there available to kind of fill that need.
Mm-hmm. How would a farmer go about potentially being considered for the Carolina Farm Fund program?
This is for Eli, our 14th.
Yes. So word of mouth, as you might think, as you think through it, is the way farmers get their information. They want to talk to somebody that they know and trust. Mm-hmm. And are they going to be speaking the truth to them? What's it really like? So if you get people like Deep Roots or Boy and Girl Farm doing it, other farmers are going to go, oh,
yeah,
they're doing it. Maybe I should do it. Mm-hmm. They seem to be doing things well. Maybe I should consider that.
Mm-hmm.
So word of mouth is super important. We're trying to also make sure that it's available, you know, when and if they express an interest. We're trying to get out there in the farming community at farmers markets. Oftentimes, the people running those, they see who these farmers are that are setting up booths, and they, you know, they're hoping that they will grow and evaluate. We'll have three tables versus two or five mm-hmm. tables. And so word of mouth circulates in various different ways, but also programs like this. Maybe word gets out.
Mm-hmm.
We have so many listeners. It is out
yeah,
now.
It is yeah. out now.
Thank you.
What
everyone.
About like the general public or people in Charlotte who are interested in this kind of program? How do they support you all, support what you're doing or learn more about it? How did they get involved?
Or donate.
Yeah. So thank you for, you know, coming to the most important question. So one of the things we have to do to get this program going over the 10 years is we've got to raise $17 million in private money, and that'll be a land purchase fund. Some of that money we'll use to support the infrastructure of the farmers, you know, once they get started in that 4-year lease period to help them. But they'll be responsible and on the hook for most of that. But purchasing the land, and as you know, the land prices in this area are going up.
What is an acre of farmland right now? So
in our model, you know, over the 10 years, you know, we started with 10,000 an acre.
And that's always the number that I hear. But
that doesn't work in Mecklenburg. That doesn't work in the area between Charlotte and some of these growing cities like Gastonia, like Salisbury, like Concord. But, you know, on the outskirts of those places, it works. And we should be able to do it. So hopefully on average, you know, we're doing that. It just depends on how fast this metro area is growing and whether we can, you know, get in there and preserve the land as working farms.
Mm-hmm. So guy off the street, girl off the street to get involved. The fundraising is the biggest part. They go to your website to do so or learn more about it or other engagement opportunities for them? What do you have?
We're working on a website. We don't have that yet, but you know, a lot of people have said to us, hey, I'd like to learn more. Where do I go? Mm-hmm. So we're working on a space on the Conservation Fund website.
Mm-hmm.
We're mainly at word of mouth, mm-hmm. you know, trying to circulate it now. We also have 400 people on an email list. So we're sending that out. There are farmers on that. We're trying to build that list so we can communicate quarterly with them. We're also occasionally working with media and trying to get a story out there that will tell that. There was an interview with Deep Roots. We hope to have the same thing coming out with Joe and Amy at Boy and Girl Farm. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're looking for 10 years of experience, not always 10, but, you know, because this is not for the faint of heart. We want people to really know what they're getting in for.
And this is, I don't know, like, if people really understand how important this is, that this is the backbone of the culinary scene of Charlotte. That if everybody wants better restaurants in their town and it is support something like this, because the more local produce we have, the more local farms we have, the better tools we have to put better things on the plate and do a great job. And the more restaurants that can do that, it really is. It starts with initiatives like this and things like that. And that's what builds our culinary scene.
It brings higher level chefs too, because they start seeing, hey, what's happening down there in the Carolinas? There's a lot of access to local farms and produce, and they've got these programs and there's good relationships, and then we're able to attract and then retain better chefs, and they can grow within our group and other restaurants within Charlotte.
Yeah, we're it's so true. We're part of an ecosystem. You know, the restaurants, the chefs, the farmers, the farmers markets. We're connected, and I think we have winds at our back. We have a growing metro area. And that should be, you know, a plus for us. I'm excited about that part of it.
And to me, hitting a farmer's market, and you don't even really need to know how to cook. You can go to a farmer's market, buy some stuff that you think is cool, watch a few YouTube videos, and make yourself a meal. Like to me, that is an awesome weekend, is like pick up something cool that you've never worked with before, you never cooked before. Open a bottle of wine and see how it goes.
Prickly pear margaritas.
Yum. Yum. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been just an absolute pleasure to learn more about Wild Hope Farm and then also the Carolina Farm Fund and a little bit about you too. So we're so glad to have you, and thank you for all that you're doing here in Charlotte and this area.
It's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Enjoyed it.
Thanks.
Wow, that was an awesome conversation with Tim. I love what they're doing. It shows that we need to just keep getting better and keep working more with all our local farmers.
It is incredible, because if they're able to do what they want to do of bringing those, you know, the farmlands here closer, truly that can have a huge impact on our culinary scene. And it's not something that will probably be felt in 10 years. It might be felt in 12, 15, 20 years, you know, because you then have the infrastructure that everybody can build upon.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Originally, I had a little bit of a disconnect between taking land and you know, making it permanently for the life of it be for farms. But they have such a system built out, and the way it works is amazing, and how it just keeps growing and growing, and
they're able to take that money and reinvest it back into other land.
And giving the opportunities to these farmers and just great partners of ours that we've had for a long time. We know they're awesome and they do a great job. So it's really cool to see them getting, you know, those opportunities.
Well, I think one of my biggest takeaways from this conversation was just Tim himself, how humble he is. You know, he's obviously been very successful, and his family has been not just very successful, but also highly impactful here in this area. I mean, they are the bedrock of a number of different gigantic institutions, from Davidson College to, you go uptown, you see that name sprinkled all over the place. And he's so humble. And I think he's really taking that family legacy in a different direction, but in an equally impactful direction.
Yeah, he's building his own legacy, and 10,000 acres close by would be just amazing. I'll take that.
Absolutely.
What a backbone for us restaurants to work off of.
It is. And yeah, you never know how that's going to continually shape the restaurant industry here and who's going to want to come in, because there's just that kind of infrastructure between that, or like the distribution systems that we have through Freshless, things like that, that could really, really be impactful. So, well, thank you all for listening. And we're grateful we were able to bring on Tim Belk this morning. Please like, comment, share, subscribe. We would love to talk to you again soon here on here. And we look forward to the next one.